Well, welcome to the Church Office Podcast.
My name's Gavin Smith, and if you're joining us on video, then here's a little wave.
We're excited to have Nigel Ring join us.
I've never actually heard the word wicked and accountant put in the same sentence.
Well, hello and welcome to the Church Office Podcast. My name is Gavin Smith, and it's a joy to welcome you today to this Church Administration Admin and Ops Podcast. We love talking about the ministry behind the scenes, and one of our joys is to invite guests onto our podcast. And my special guest today from Scotland, David Anson. How are you doing, my friend? You well?
Gavin, great to see you, and delighted that you've wanted to speak to somebody north of the border. And about what I can be most helpful with, particularly in your sphere of ministry as well. So
yeah, it's great. And David and I met at the FIC conference, and there was 1,000 people there. I was there on my own and strolling around the table thinking, where on earth am I going to sit? And there was a space right next to you, isn't it amazing how God just brings people together? And I met you and your wife, and we chatted over my session, and then we found out a whole bunch of stuff about what you're doing. Fill us in a little bit about the project and why you started this.
Yeah, so how did it come about? I guess an initial idea came about way back in about 2010. In my latter pastoral ministry, church life, I've served in three churches, but I served in one from 2000 to 2022. And about 2010, in a large city centre church, as a pastor, was really wrestling with how I could effectively pastor people in a congregation. Mm. Some folks may have read the book Trellis and the Vine, and I think the reading of that with a senior pastor at the church enabled both of us to realise that there were changes we could make in how we did pastoral ministry. And one of those changes, although we were both committed as pastors to go around and see families, go to people's homes in the evening, we all do that, and that's an extension of our ministry, isn't it, to be out and about morning, afternoon and evening. But we began to realise that there were probably people during the day who were in the city, as well as just a different context of meeting people other than just in their home, that we could begin to start reading the Bible and praying with people in a coffee shop or in some other setting. And actually, ironically, when COVID hit, we were able to do it one-to-one walking. But way back in 2010, it was just this idea that began to generate about how to do pastoral ministry differently by being very relational and very focused. Now, obviously, we would be totally committed as a pastor. I would be committed to minister to a family, so that a husband and wife and kids, I'm delighted to go and meet them in their homes. But there were other times where, by meeting them individually for their own growth, particularly the guys or the dads in the families, that spending time with them in their own, I could get a sense of their heart, they could get a sense of my heart. And so from that, I had a sabbatical in 2016, and it was on discipleship and it was on caring for folks. And at the time, I had about half a dozen pastors that I had been in touch with. I decided to be intentional about just meeting up with them during the sabbatical time as well, and discovered that actually what I'd been doing in my pastoral ministry with members in the congregation just naturally extended to do exactly the same thing with pastors. I had never received that myself as a pastor, but actually in the process of doing it, realized how beneficial it was to those pastors. And then the ideas began to, I guess, germinate a bit more. And how could I make this a reality? Would it be possible to make it a reality alongside a busy pastoral ministry? Or should I go part-time? Could this be full-time? If it was, what would it look like? So that's a wee bit of how it came about. And this a relational nature of the ministry to people that just extended over to pastors as well.
Yeah, that's great. And the face-to-face project, it covers and serves pastors with mentoring and coaching. And you and I have met up since FIC, and I've got the chance to kind of experience firsthand what it's like to be cared for you, and it's lovely. And you've got a huge heart for pastors. And we know, don't we, that the the context for pastors is getting more and more difficult, isn't it? It's more and more challenging and more pressures. Mm. Do you want to speak into that a little bit? What are you coming across as you meet pastors? What are they facing?
So it's interesting when people ask me, and you've asked me that in general terms, you know, what sort of things am I coming across? Obviously, there are statistics and trends out there as well that organizations have done research on.
Mm.
I think similarly to pastoral ministry, as a pastor spending time with a member in the congregation, it's their whole life that we want to input into and share. And so I often find it difficult when somebody says to me, so what are the main things? I don't have a top three list of, yeah, these are the three things that we need to be hitting all the time, because the conversation often just becomes a conversation about life and ministry, how life overlaps with ministry and how ministry overlaps with life. Now, there are some particular things that I think pastors uniquely are challenged by and struggle with. They obviously struggle with and are challenged by their own heart, their own devotion and service to Christ. They are also challenged in particular by the strain that can come on them as a shepherd caring for sheep. So any congregation, whether it's small or large, a pastor's responsibility is a weighty responsibility. Mm. And I've got to be careful when I say that, because there is a good shepherd and there is the one who is the shepherd, and he's the shepherd of the pastors as well. But actually in situ, a pastor who's wanting to serve out of his giftedness or serve under his responsibility realizes that there's a responsibility to care for the flock. And that means that 101 things can both come his way and 101 scenarios can just burden him. So there's the level of burden that's there. And so there, his own heart, there's the burdens that just come up in the life and ministry of a local congregation. And then I think in more modern days, and I'm 58 now, so sort of the shift and the right shift towards safeguarding policies and church policies that actually your own organization would be wanting to help churches with for right reasons, becomes an additional burden to a pastor. Mm-hmm. Maybe a burden that I didn't face in my early years, because those things maybe weren't as pressing, but that becomes an administrative burden for a pastor is a great thing as well. And I know that you would say, well, every church should have an administrator, not just a pastor. And that's absolutely right, because that takes the pressure and tension of pastoral ministry. And so because I don't have a top three, I always just have some wee stats to hand. So the American organization who do research, Barna in the US, 2023, did some research on the well-being of pastors, particularly about their confidence and about their satisfaction in ministry. And it turned out that 2 out of 5 actually wanted to leave ministry completely just because of the lack of confidence and the lack of satisfaction in that role. So there's a whole well-being issue that does exist, no doubt, not just the other side of the Atlantic, but this side of the Atlantic as well.
And that's a staggering reality, isn't it? 2 out of 5 pastors. Mm-hmm. I know that's American-based research, but if we take that into the UK, you know, the pastors that I speak to, that's probably a right statistic, isn't it, in terms of the UK?
Yeah, well, the UK Ministry Survey in 2021 focused on energy levels and being energized. So I guess it's a similar sort of well-being issue that's there. And it was about a third just disenergized, if you want to put it that way, a third with some level of energy, and then a third feeling more energized. And so there are different pressures, I guess, that would cause a sapping of energy. Mm. And there are different pressures that would cause an impact on their well-being. And maybe the three that I've highlighted, the pastor's own heart, the heart and health of the local congregation, and then just some administrative burdens. Now, there are many, many more we could talk about, but those are at least three that can put pressures upon people.
That's helpful, really helpful. Now, in your vision statement, you talk a little bit about this kind of 10 years mm-hmm. of, you know, pastors who've been in ministry for 10 years. Why have you pitched it there? It'd be really interesting to kind of find out a bit more about that.
Yeah. So although I never received one-to-one mentoring or coaching or discipling as a Christian, mm-hmm. nor as a pastor, in the early 90s, my wife and I, the first church that were involved in pastoral ministry in was in Luton, which was just outside London. And that gave access to Proclamation Trust. And I would regularly attend Proclamation Trust events. And they had a system back then where they had younger ministers' conferences and senior ministers' conferences.
Okay.
And the younger ministers' conference were basically ministers in their first 10 years.
Mm.
So I suppose when I began to start thinking, right, okay, I need to be focused. I can't do everything. I think that experience that I had had by attending conferences, interestingly, with pastors in their first 10 years, with pastors too who were beyond their 10-year stage mixing together, just became something that jumped into my head and thought, well, that's a target. That's something at least to aim at. Mm. I think as I've done it now, I've realized that that's been really, really important.
Yeah.
Because although I survived the first 10 years and I survived the first 20 years and I survived the first 30 years and then I hit 32 years, I thought, what could I do well with my next decade? I find myself now doing this. You know, I think pastors sometimes feel as though they just have to keep going on and on and on with the additional pressures. And I'm not, that's a different argument, I suppose, a different conversation. But I'm not convinced that we should just keep on going. I think we should, as I've done with my last decade officially, thought, how can I be energized to do something that is of value and really put stuff in? Now, I think as I look back now, there were, so in my first 10 years, I experienced two churches and two different churches. One, back in the 90s, there were no associate programs, there were no pastor in training roles or no apprentice programs. So I was involved just as an assistant pastor in a church of about 70 people in Luton. And in that first 10 years, I then made a move to become a sole pastor in a very small church here in the outskirts of Edinburgh with about 20 people initially. And so I had experienced some sort of training development and then had experienced being landed just into a situation. And as I reflected back on those first 10 years, I'm just grateful to God for the fact that we were able to get through those.
Mm.
But I'm becoming more and more aware now that these first 10 years are very, very crucial. Probably always were crucial, but I think that is the society we're living in changing? At root level, at foundational level, probably not, in terms of just, you know, sin is sin, Satan is Satan, church life is hard. Is my heart going to be drawn after other things? Are the congregation's life going to be drawn after other things? Are there going to be additional things impinging upon us? None of that has changed. But maybe just the way that society expects organisations to treat people and everything else means that there are these additional pressures. Mm-hmm. And I'm particularly picking that up because I know that that's your heart in making sure that some aspects of pastoral life or church life is taken on by good administrators, good directors of church operations, key people in deacons' roles doing that stuff if it's a smaller congregation or whatever. So I think all those things put together, I've got no scientific evidence of it, but I think there's something important about those first 10 years.
Yeah. No, that's really helpful, isn't it? And I think some of the leaders I've met within sort of denominational groups are saying, where they think their churches need help is two main areas, they would say. One is church management, mm-hmm. kind of administration, you know, that burden. And the second one is some mentoring and coaching. And mm-hmm. and that just keeps coming back time and time again. Mm-hmm. And I think there is a desire for younger pastors to have somebody that they can be mentored by, that somebody can sit and coach them in different ways. Do you think there's benefit? Because I mean, if you're part of FIC or something, then mm-hmm. then there's a support network in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know some of the other local churches. You go to conferences. Yeah. Is there a benefit, do you think, of finding someone outside of your network to do this kind of this interaction of, you know, life and ministry?
Yep. So a couple of things there. Obviously, it was conferences for me in my first 10 years at Proc Trust that were very helpful. And going to the Evangelical Ministry Assembly and other conferences that I've been really helped with in both my, I guess, learning how to be a pastor, being theologically astute, but also just sharing time with people. Those were good. Mm. Yes, there are good networks within FIC here in Scotland, the Free Church of Scotland, the Bible colleges that tend to train people in the networks that I'm aware of are Cornhill in Glasgow and ETS, which was the old Free Church College here in Edinburgh. And there's an overarching organisation here in Scotland, the Bonar Trust, who help fund some of the guys coming out of all of that. And so there are good networks. But my experience is that if I begin to speak to someone who is wrestling with a challenge within a denomination or a challenge within their church or a challenge with someone in ministry, they would often say that it's far better to have someone who's not a stakeholder. And so they would really advocate for mentors outside of as opposed to inside of. Now, that doesn't mean conferences can't do something. That doesn't mean that FIC's pastors network can't accomplish something. Of course they can, absolutely.
Yeah.
But actually my experience would be on the ground, most pastors would say they so appreciate just somebody independent outside of the situation, able to view it from a completely different perspective.
Yeah, that does sound helpful. And I can see pastors benefiting from that. And we had a conversation before, didn't we, and chatted about just the changes that need to come with some of those kind of contractual terms as we employ pastors and leaders. There's a general awareness, we want to send them to conferences to continue to, you know, develop their relational network, their own, you know, support network in some ways. There's ongoing training that's offered in places, but rarely there's marriage counseling, rarely there's mentoring and coaching that's even included in these things. Mm-hmm. How would you speak into that, and how would you encourage pastors to ask for that as they go into new situations, and for administrators who are listening to this and managers who are listening to this going, actually, we need to step up and bring a little bit of change into this and bring about some clauses that are going to serve everyone. So, give me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. And I think you've got me thinking about that more as you and I have chatted, because obviously you see the need in your own church setting, you do that role. So you see the value, and the church see the value of that. As you're doing it with other churches as well and denominations, they too see the value of that. But I think we always do hit this challenge of, I don't know how many of my pastors, because I've never asked them, do they contractually have it written in that their own well-being, and you mentioned marriage counselling or just family help, you know, is that written in? Is it written in that having a mentor or coach? And maybe those, we can come back to that. Maybe there are two different things going on there with a mentor and a coach. But is that written into their contract? So I think I should probably be asking my guys, is that the case? I suspect not. And even if it is written in, it will be in very vaguely, so that when it comes to the pastor asking, unless it's written in blood, in a sense, they're thinking, is this going to happen? And then if the person who's doing the mentoring has a fee, or they themselves feel as though it would be important to recognize the organization that's offering this, so that generosity can be given to others, then they're unlikely to ask for it if it's not clear. So maybe to help, we should be thinking about having some statements in these contracts that really helps pastors to access something that they may not access because it's just not written in their terms and conditions. Quite often what's written in the terms and conditions would be, you know, what do you do if you're off sick? What is the sick pay status? You know, and you know, how long are you allowed to be off before, you know, we go to statutory sick pay or something like that, or it might be their holidays will be written in, these sort of things. But actually, mentoring and coaching and obviously in a denomination, maybe they have got written in, and I can think of some denominations that would have written in, and actually FIEC is an overarching organisation. You know, if you become part of the PN, the Pastors Network, you're part of a network and you have that.
Yeah.
But actually, I think I experience that pastors just need more than that. They need that,
mm-hmm.
but they need more than that.
Yeah.
And so by having something written in that would ask for that to be granted is really key. Of course, the converse of that is, if there are not enough mentors out there to do it, who's going to do it? And I think I'm beginning to see, as I work with a number of guys who would be in their third or fourth decade,
mm-hmm.
and I think those in their third and fourth decade have a real responsibility to think, what are we doing for the future generation of pastors?
Yes.
Now, every pastor at that stage has to make their own decision about what they do.
Yeah.
I've personally made the decision to step away from co-face to actually give myself in my total capacity with enthusiasm and energy to the life of the pastor. Now, I'm not saying that every pastor has to do that, but I think to increase the number of mentors doing more mentoring, so that if contracts are written, there are actually mentors to be able to meet the needs of the requests that are made. So
yeah, I think that's helpful. And yeah, let me encourage you, if you're an administrator who's looking to employ a pastor, then please do consider these things in terms of, you know, conference budget, in terms of, you know, one-to-one support in a kind of mentoring or coaching capacity. I think that really is going to serve. And this isn't something that's an ongoing cost. This could be a season. And I think, you know, what we want to do is try and prevent leaders getting to a point where they are at burnout. And I talk to a lot of administrators, and we can sometimes be the first ones who can start to see leaders who are disintegrating a little bit behind the scenes, mm-hmm. who need to be, you know, encouraged to make a step towards something like the service that you're providing. Mm-hmm. And so let's be mindful, I think, of our leaders, and let's write these things in and give people access to call on it when they need it. And but let's go and look at the kind of the burnout question. Somebody shared with me an illustration about burnout. They were saying it's a bit like microwavable popcorn, and you know, you get the first few pops and it's okay, but as the heat gets more, all of a sudden you've got this overwhelming popping going on, and it's so quick and so simple from that line to go, suddenly you've burnt the popcorn and the house just absolutely reeks of smoke. I've done that a few times with the kids. Sorry, Emma. But it's an interesting illustration thing. Actually, yeah, life can be a little bit like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And burnout, I think, is a kind of reality, isn't it? And people actually putting their hands up and saying, I'm feeling this at the minute. I'm struggling with this at the minute. Are leaders good at that? What would be your thoughts around that whole area?
So I think for me, when I've seen burnout, as you've described it, or as somebody else described it as, if you have an electric bike and the electric bike has a battery, but it also has a reserve battery, and this is our situation. This is a plug for Van Moof Dutch bikes, because they're good bikes. But the problem is when they go wrong, they're a disaster. So you've got your main battery and your reserve battery. But the problem is, if you don't charge it over the winter and the reserve battery goes dead, you've got absolutely no chance of recharging the full battery. And I think, sadly, any time I've seen burnout presented, it's been presented at collapse.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe because that's the case, and again, Gavin, you're getting me thinking about this, maybe I do need to think about the sort of questions that I ask when I meet up for a mentoring session that includes questions about physical health, questions about emotional health, questions about mental health, questions about spiritual health. And I do ask those four related questions. But I think, as you've described, the seriousness of burnout when it hits and the reality of seeing it you know, at its at right face up when it happens, because I have over the years, then yeah, I do probably need to be thinking about digging in a wee bit. Although, because I'm cycling through emotional, cycling through physical, cycling through spiritual, cycling through mental, I think I do hear guys speaking from their heart a wee bit. And I think I spend a lot of time listening when I have a mentoring session, but I do try and ask questions that maybe just draw out their heart a wee bit. I think that goes way back to the experience as a pastor in 2010, thinking about doing pastoral ministry. Mm. It wasn't that I was the answer to people, but I think I realized that as I stood up to preach the Bible, and that is really important to do in the gathered congregation, we were relying on the Holy Spirit, obviously, to do the work in people's hearts. But yeah. As a pastor, if I had 100 people in front of me, I didn't have a clue what was going on in their hearts.
Yeah.
But if I was meeting up with 10 of them or 12 of them or 20 of them in a coffee shop or in their home and asking those four related types of questions, suddenly I was, and it wasn't I was the answer, I was asking the questions so that they could then speak out of the overflow of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
I could hear it. And then say back to them, do you hear how you've put into words what's going on? And if that was the case in any of those four areas, spiritual, physical, emotional, or mental, then suddenly as a pastor, I was in a position maybe to have a different course of conversation. And I think that would be the same with pastors too. So, yeah, you're reminding me I need to do it more to try and make sure we reduce the potential of burnout.
Yeah.
But actually, as I'm just thinking it through in my head, I think the sort of listening that I do and the questions I ask result in guys being quite honest.
Yeah. 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 That's good. Well, let's finish on this kind of difference between mentoring and coaching, because we haven't covered that. And, mm-hmm. and we're using both words. It'd mm-hmm. be interesting to see how you describe that in the kind of the format of kind of talking about life and ministry as a pastor in a situation on one-to-one with you. Fill me in on how you would split those two apart.
Yeah. So generally for me, in my simplicity of thinking, I generally look on mentoring as more longer term.
Yeah.
Coaching as more shorter term.
Yeah.
Mentoring requires developed relationship. It develops a relational context, I think, for it to be as successful as it can be.
Mm-hmm.
Coaching less so. So, you know, if somebody was coaching somebody's backhand in tennis, mm-hmm. They're a coach. You employ the coach, you get them to do it, and they can help with the discipline.
Yeah.
And so that would be my way. Coaching would be more shorter term. Mentoring is more longer term. Mentoring is more relationally based. Now, that doesn't mean that coaching can't be relationally based, and I think it should be, and there are good organizations out there who are offering gospel coaching, who are offering coaching from a gospel perspective,
mm-hmm.
That is relational. But I think coaching is much more about trying to accomplish something in an area, whereas mentoring is much more a holistic life and ministry. Let's talk as widely as possible about everything. I actually, the strapline, I think, on the website says, Christ-centered mentoring, coaching, and discipling for pastors in the first 10 years. So again, back to my 2010 experience of pastoral ministry, it wasn't that I was the answer to everybody. Now, all of us know as Christian leaders, there's a time where we've got to step up and be the discipler, a bit like Paul was to Timothy. Yeah. But I think I've also realized over the years that one of the important healthy things in the life of a pastor and congregation, or even just in a Christian and a Christian, is that when it comes to discipling and discipleship, although there are times where we need to coach, if you like, and take the responsibility of giving help, most of the times we should be thinking about, we should be meeting together to encourage one another,
mm-hmm.
to be growing disciples of Jesus. Mm-hmm. So we're disciples of Jesus, and we need to encourage the growing to be of disciples of Jesus. And that's key. And so in everything that I do as well, whether it's coaching or whether it's mentoring, actually the mutual encouragement of one another to be growing disciples of Jesus is a key, simple I don't mean simple. A focused priority, for us.
Yeah, that's great. So if a pastor's picked this up or administrator's picked this up and is going to go and encourage a pastor into at least exploring whether this is something that would serve them, you're based in Scotland, serving Scottish ministers. You talked about mentors potentially being limited across the UK. What does someone do next after kind of listening to this? What will you encourage?
Yeah, I mean, so if they have absolutely no contact with any source where they might be able to receive some mentoring, then feel free to message me. Not that I'll necessarily do the mentoring, but there are at least, and maybe actually on the podcast, you might be able to put a list of 3 or 4 organisations that, that I would have in a network that we would be aware of that people could contact.
Yeah, no, happy to. Yeah.
So either, you know, people must feel free to contact me, David Anderson at facetofacescotland.org. Happy for people to do that, to talk about anything related to this stuff, even if they're not in Scotland, because we'd want to just move the whole thing on a bit.
Yeah.
But if we can, on the podcast, list, you know, 3 or 4 different organisations that would be in a mentoring or coaching side of things, and maybe regionally where they are, then that might help folks as well. So.
Absolutely great. Yeah. And if you've got a question for David or myself and you'd like to follow up on this, we would love to grab a coffee with you or at least interact with you somehow over Zoom, over a meeting. We'd love that. So if you do have any specific questions, please get in contact at questions@thechurchoffice.co.uk and we'll forward them on and link you up. And mate, it's lovely to both hear about what you're doing, but also to just capture your heart for pastors and your love for them. Mm-hmm. And you know, that I know just looking at your stats, a number of people that have gone through your service and have been helped by this. And just reading some of the comments in your latest report, which I encourage people to go and have a look at the website and find out a little bit more about what David is doing. You're making a huge difference, and I'm sure you can you feel that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I it's not about me, but actually, by mentoring the sort of guys that I am, I hear them saying this is hugely beneficial. And yeah, if you go to the website facetofacescotland.org, I think pinned actually at the top of it is a link to the impact report that Gavin's referring to. That's what we had to submit to Oscar this year as a charity, but actually it's not a dry read. It gives some good help in terms of just some of the responses that we've seen from the mentors, mentees. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Great. And if you're listening to this and you're an older person coming to an end of what a ministry life, and I know we've chatted about a number of people who have that sense of actually I could play a part in serving these guys, then please again get in contact with David and see what that step might look like for you to get involved in something like this across the UK. So I love that. Well, mate, thank you so much for filling us in on what you're doing. Thank you so much for taking the time. Appreciated our friendship and just a joy of meeting you and learning about what you're doing and being cared for by you as well, my friend, is a joy. Now, we're both football fans as well, aren't we? Big.
Yeah, so unfortunately my team Clyde are languishing at the foot of League Two in Scotland, are likely to slip out into the Lowland League if
it's not looking good, is it?
No, it's not looking good, so no.
Are you still doing, because last time we chatted you were doing some sports coaching
so
give us 2 minutes on that before we go.
I'm an unofficial chaplain really of a church football team, and it's just been a blessing actually over the last 3 years to see. I mean, the Corrubbers FC, that was the church that I was a pastor for 22 years, but I've left there now, having stepped down from my pastoral ministry full-time role. We stayed around at the church for 2 years, and I think that was important, but my wife and I have now moved to a local church which is literally 5 minutes away from us here, and we're thrilled to be part of that. But I still have interaction with the guys. About 2/3 of the guys in the team are not Christians. A third of them are, some from Corrubbers, some from other churches in the city. And they're just really intentional about having a Bible verse explained in the changing room. They're really intentional about having not just prayer in terms of or hope we win today, but prayer in terms of praying for one another's lives,
yeah.
And just the whole ethos of taking a genuine interest in one another's welfare. And it's just been a huge thrill of mine to be part of that. And as a result of some of the wee talks I've done at award nights and signing nights for the guys, I'm writing this wee gospel track called With Jesus, You'll Never Walk Alone. So it's in draft form.
Yeah.
And this year, it will be done by the team, for the team. So I have three guys in the team, one a Christian, one not, and one who's just become a Christian, helping me to work in that. We hope this will be useful, a bit like Two Ways to Live.
Yeah.
Out there in the future for a wider audience. But at the moment, we're not too worried about there being mistakes in it because it's by the team, for the team. So that hopefully some of the guys themselves who are not yet followers of Jesus would become followers of Jesus. So, yeah.
Mate, love that. And if you want to find out more about that, then please connect. But thank you so much for listening to the podcast today. And we'll see you next time.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.